Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
This is the Happy Days theme song.
You're like, that doesn't sound familiar at all.
Yeah,
no, I have no idea what you guys are playing.
There was this guy named the Fonz. He was really cool.
I've heard of the Fonz.
He jumped a shark. Yeah. That's all I that's
He hit
all
the
I can
jukebox.
Tell
you. Yeah. He wore a black leather jacket.
He later was John Ralphio's dad on what was that, Parks and Rec?
Okay.
John
How's this Happy Days material doing going for you?
It's really good.
That's what they played last night when Ian Happ caught a ball in left field. They played the Happy Days theme song. It was only for us, though, apparently.
And our organist was young because we got to meet him. We're coming to you live from Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville for Cubs on Deck. We are looking forward to having Ian Happ here for the whole hour. Cubs on Deck is powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago. Visit your local Verizon store today. And I also want to point out, you've got a live show coming up in just a few days now.
We
Compound
do.
Live on the 31st.
Yeah, we're going to do Compound Live at Music Box Theater, 7 p.m. Saturday.
Oh, sick.
Pete is going to be our guest. Pete Carr Armstrong is going to be our guest.
Well, well, well.
Yeah, Dakota's coming down, and Tom Prizman, our producer's, works for Marquee now. He's in the city, which is awesome. Yeah, we're excited. We still, VIP sold out, but we still have GA tickets available. Musicboxtheater.com, or you can walk over and grab them there.
PCA is a big get. You know that, right? Like, he's like...
Yeah, yeah.
He has to do it. Can't you just tell him, like, you have to be there?
Yeah, basically, like, yeah.
Like, okay,
yeah.
So not as big a get for him as it would be for us.
Yeah. Can I follow up on something you mentioned last week when we were talking about what looks like a just absolutely massive outfield in Miami?
Yeah.
I was laughing because you're like, yeah, there's a lot of outfield for him to run around in. And I'm like, it was like talking about him like he's a toddler where you're just trying to like tire himself out.
It's like our golden retriever. He just runs around like that.
Just throw the frisbee, see if he can get to it, right? And usually he can.
I was so curious because I heard you laugh and I was like, am I wrong? Am I off base here and thinking that that's what that was? Like, go get it, Pete.
Yeah.
Just go.
Yeah, that's what... You know, whether it's me and Tuck or Saya, it's just like, yeah, man, go get him. Like, we'll be over here. You just go get the rest of them.
Okay, while we're on him then, man, I got to say, like, after every single out he makes, and I'm sure you guys notice this, he is disgusted. It's a helmet throwdown. It's the fake the bat over the knee. Like, he is... How long can he wear that? Or do you think that he can he exist in Major League Baseball if he's going to react to every single out he makes?
He's existing pretty well.
Yeah, that's true.
He's doing it. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, that's true, whether positive or negative.
Yeah.
And that's kind of who he is as a person. He plays the game with a ton of passion, and you know, different guys go about it different ways, and you got to embrace that. And you know, he really wants to be great. He really wants to be a great player at this level. He really wants to succeed all the time. And yeah, I'm sure that'll calm itself out a little bit over the course of time, naturally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is. He really wants to be great.
Ian, I wanted to ask you about something Jed Hoyer said going back to last offseason. He talked about a couple of things. One was the weather, and he made a really big deal about how the weather has affected your ability as a team to score runs and do the things that were projected. And the other thing you talked about was basically along the lines of players playing better than the back of their baseball cards and how no one had exceeded the expectations to the level that's what it was going to take to win. Now, since then, he went out, got Kyle Tucker. That helps. You've seen what PCA has done, which has certainly been better than even the second half of what he did last season when he took the big jump. And now Matt Shaw coming back and playing the way he has. We've had people in our era say that what you guys are doing offensively, it can't last the whole season as far as scoring six runs a game because it's only been done once in Cubs history. Do you feel like this offense is sustainable?
Yeah, I think as long as guys stay healthy, I think this is the version of the Cubs that we kind of all expect or believe that we can be. And it's not going to be linear. It's not going to be exactly like this all year, right? You're not going to get the exact performance from every guy. There's going to be ups and downs for everybody. But I think our lineup's built in a way where when one guy is going through his two-week tough stretch, the other guys are going to pick him up. And I think you'll continue to see that kind of throughout the course of the year. And as, I think as long as like we stay healthy, I think we have the ability to do that. And to the point of the weather, like we've been the best offensive team on the road in baseball this year. And I think that that's kind of a testament to our ability to hit balls out of the ballpark, our ability to score in different ways. And it's something that I think I've talked about a lot today, but I really do believe that that's what makes this sustainable, is it's not just guys hitting homers with two guys on base. It's a lot of different ways and kind of up and down the lineup. It's not two guys that are carrying the whole group. You know, Pete and Saya and the amount of runs they've been able to drive in has been awesome, but you're getting it from Tucker, from Carson, from Miggy, from Dansby, like all the way up and down the lineup. You know, you're getting production, and that's huge.
You mentioned Miggy. How much has that lost her? I mean, 4 to 6 weeks, that seems like a long time,
yeah,
just in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's really tough, and, you know, it's going to be that rehab process of the oblique is a tough one, and to go through, like, he's going to have to build it back, and he's going to have to get to a place where he's comfortable, but I think that the ability for this team to weather those stretches just because of the depth of the lineup is there. And I think we're all in the camp of, hey, man, get that right, and you're going to be a huge part of this down the stretch.
I also just want to ask you, so many times we're taught as media people to not ask the phrase, like, how does it feel? I kind of think that's silly, because I do want to know how it feels to you guys, how this run feels. And we've talked so much about, over the years, about data and this and that bearing out in a certain way and whether or not protection in the lineup is real. I think it is. You know, I think having more talent on your pitching staff also lends itself to that kind of discussion following the bullpen. But all of that said, you know, we're talking to you after a walk-off last night. Like, we've seen what this Cubs team is doing right now. I feel like you can see it in the at-bats. How does it feel for you watching this team come together in this way?
Yeah, I think it feels pretty natural. I think all of us have been on great teams at some point, that when you go to the ballpark, it feels like you're going to win every day. You know, Tuck's had it in Houston, Dansby's had it in Atlanta. You know, I've had it early in my career here. Nico's been a part of it. And so, you know, it feels like that. It feels like you come to the ballpark and you expect to win, and you don't know exactly how it's going to be, but you kind of expect that. And it's a really, that's a really good feeling. And it's something that you just continue to build on. And I think you continue to build that momentum and have that belief in the group. And that's a powerful thing.
I also like the idea of what you're saying about, like, this is kind of what we expected out of the offense. And you probably weren't thinking as deeply as I was kind of going in my head, because, like, towards the end of the I guess you could say the Theo Epstein regime, that obviously, which was hyper successful, three straight trips to the NLCS, a World Series victory in 2016. You come on the scene in 2017. And towards the ends of those years, like, later on, like, Theo was big on, we're not making contact anymore. It seems like whatever they had going on, hitting the ball over the wall, that was starting to dissipate. And then the idea of making contact became real, and there wasn't enough contact. And now it's like, not only you guys are making contact, but it's hard contact, and sometimes the ball goes over the wall, and you guys are stealing bases, and you guys are hitting these small little hits to win games last night. It feels like this was the sort of rebuild, if you will, that Jed Hoyer had envisioned. Am I overcomplicating it, or is there mm-hmm. something to that?
No, I don't know that it goes all the way back to, like, 2017, 2018, yeah. 2019, but I think that it is, from a roster construction standpoint and from a lineup construction, like, you're not trying to change anybody to be a different version. You know, you're not asking Pete to walk at a 15% clip. Like, Pete's walking at a 5% clip. He's hitting a bunch of homers. He's stealing bases. Like, that's great.
Be you.
Be yeah. yourself.
Yeah.
Tucker is going to not strike out, and he's going to walk a lot. Like, that's who he is as a player. He's always been that guy. Nico's going to put the ball in play a bunch. He's going to have a top five lowest strikeout percentage in baseball. Like, that's who he is. And so you've just built a lineup of guys that you can sustain when a guy's punching 25-30% of the time, because you know you have other guys in the lineup who aren't going to do that. And I think it's this nice even balance where you just let guys go and be themselves, mm-hmm. and it flows really well.
I also want to ask you that question that I had in the last segment about Jameson Taillon, because I know you guys talk quite a bit.
Yeah.
He's a coffee connoisseur.
He really is.
But it does amaze me that he's like, oh, this year I'm going to add a sweeper. You know, just the casual way he's able to add so many pitches into his arsenal. Right now he's working on a kick change, and this is his approach to left-handed batters or right-handed batters, and just how he casually folds in something that is so difficult for other people. What does that say about just not only his approach, but his talent? I've never been more impressed, I think, than perhaps this year in the way he talks about that aspect of his game.
I think it really makes you hate pitchers, doesn't it? I'm just going to add a pitch today. It's like, you know what? I can't just add my, like, oh, I'm going to add the homer swing today. Like, doesn't exist for us. But yeah, it's super impressive. I think his ability, when I was on the IL, I was able to stand in on one of his bullpens and just some of the things he was working on and his ability to throw, you know, 5, 6, 7 pitches and to do it in a way that it's not easy at this point in your career to add something. You know, he's been really successful over the course of his career. He's been out there and he's had great years and he gives you a chance to win every time he's out. And so to keep adding things, hey, I don't think I'm being as successful against, or I don't have a pitch, this pitch to lefties. Well, here, let's try this changeup and to find a feel for it and to be able to do it. And this year, he had been really successful with the backdoor cutter last year. This year, guys were kind of, lefties were hitting his backdoor cutter. And to be able to say, well, maybe I need to make a change to that. Maybe I need to throw more curveballs or more sweepers or more of this other pitch plus a kick change to lefties to be more successful. The hip shot sinker he's been able to execute a bunch of times this year. And just to continue to build his arsenal and continue to think through the game start to start is pretty impressive. And I think you've seen the results of that and just how consistent and how effective he's been. And it's... In the game today, it's really easy to highlight and get super excited about the guys that go out and give you 7 innings, 8 innings, and they have a 0.8 ERA. Like, yeah, that's awesome. It's fantastic. There's only a handful of guys in baseball who are able to do that. A guy that goes out every day, gives you quality starts every fifth day where it's 2 runs, it's 3 runs, it's 6 innings, it's 7 innings, and you're just always in the baseball game. And with our offense and our lineup, like, that is so huge for us to be able to, he goes out there and we know we're going to be in the game in the 6th or 7th inning. It's really fun to play behind.
We were talking a moment ago about certain rumors out there. Obviously, you guys need more pitching help because you can never have enough arms, right? But there's been this tornado of a swell going around the city of Pittsburgh about what they're going to do with Paul Skenes. And the fact that they're already talking about punting on the Paul Skenes era in Pittsburgh is beyond wild to me, except I used to work in Pittsburgh and cover that team, and I'm not surprised at anything that ownership would do to sell their fan base short. What is this idea that they can't build and spend at least a little money around a guy, a phenom of that talent, of that caliber? He's already been an all-star in his rookie season. Why is this happening in baseball?
There's a lot of reasons why it's happening. And honestly, I don't think they're going to trade Paul Skenes. I think that's more of a media blitz than reality. I don't think Paul Skenes is going to get traded from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like, I would be shocked. But I think when you look at it, their number 2 starter, number 3 starter, however you want to say it, Jared Jones went down. He had to get season-ending surgery. So they had Skenes, Jones, Keller. It's kind of their top 3 that were going to be there, that were going to be available. Jones goes down. He's out for the year. Bailey's been great, and they have guys who have had good performances. The guys that they have extended, you know, they keep Ryan Hayes and Reynolds. Like, they have some guys that they've extended. They're going to be there. And when you look at the game today, there is this, hey, if you have a superstar talent and you don't think that you're going to be competitive for 1-2 years, does it make more sense to move that guy and to get 2 big league ready players plus, you know, plus prospects that you think could be superstars? Does that make sense? And I think there's a real argument for it. I think there's a real argument for, is that maybe the way to rebuild your franchise versus we're just going to hold on to this one guy and we don't have a chance to win, but because he's one of the best players in the game. You see it every year with the guys that are in their 3rd year of arbitration. They're about to be a free agent. They have 1 year of control left. And the GMs feel like they have to shop that guy because they're going to pay. You saw it. Dylan Cease got shopped kind of late into the offseason. Like, well, we only have 1 year of control left, and we have to consider it. And with Juan Soto, you saw it. And then now you see where the Yankees are. You know, they end up not paying Juan Soto, but with that money, they were able to turn that into a Goldschmidt and Bellinger and other pieces. Like, is that a better way to go about it than to have the one guy? And you've seen the Nationals be able to rebuild with all the guys they got back in the Soto trade. Like, there's an argument for, and especially when you're in a small market, to say, like, maybe this is the right thing to do for the health of the franchise. I don't think it excuses having a super low payroll and not being able to build some kind of group around really, really good players. But I think there's an argument for it, but I do not think the Pirates are going to do that. I would be shocked.
We're a long ways away from the end of his arbitration run. I mean, we're not even there yet. So that's why I think it was so shocking to even hear this discussion. But maybe it is just a media thing.
I think it is. I think it's more of something that people are talking about because they're saying with where they're at right now.
Mm-hmm. It's like a logical thing to think of.
And unfortunately, we saw it on the other side of town with Garrett Crochet. Like, you could have argued that they could have built around him. Also said that in his prime, you know, would they be ready? And they end up trading him for a bevy of prospects, and that guy's probably winning the AL Cy Young this year.
Yeah, and I think that you've seen, you know, the examples of superstar players getting traded and the prospect hall not working out. You see that. But I guess what's not talked about as much is when you hold on to a player that you think is going to be great, and then that doesn't work out, and the flip side of that, where, well, this guy was supposed to be really good, we didn't, or it was this big prospect when a team was trying to make a run that they this is our untouchable guy that they didn't trade, and then he gets to the big leagues and doesn't pan out, and you don't hear about the flip side of that very often, and I think that's what makes being a GM or a team president so challenging, is you're trying to make those decisions and you're trying to do it in the right windows and what's best for the team, and it's just, it's not a science. It's really hard.
Oh, man. I was hoping it was a science. We're going to ask Ian Happ to put his American Idol judge hat on next.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's time. Stretch. We asked for tips from your teammate with Nico. Mm-hmm. So now we got to ask your opinion on the seventh inning stretch we sang last night. More with Ian Happ from a wonderful crowd here at Brickhouse Tavern. That is coming up next. Raheemy Harrison Grody. More on The Score.